Yes, welcome back to Tuesday's edition of World Football Daily here on the show. I'm delighted to be joined by somebody who's making their World Football Daily debut today. There's a few nerves in the air this afternoon for a new arrival on the World Football Daily airwaves, but it is Jackie Oatley, BBC football reporter and the first ever female commentator on Match of the Day, joining us today on the show. Jackie, are you there and how are you? Are you nervous about the debut at all?
Well, it's a good job I am here after the build-up you've given me, isn't it?
if you didn't show, I'd be looking quite ridiculous like right now, I have to say, Jackie. How are you? How are things in the world of football reporting, I guess?
Yes, very well, thank you. And very, very busy, as you can probably gather, bearing in mind all the Arsene Wenger shenanigans of the last 24 hours, keeping me busy.
Yes, that's something that we definitely will come to. Actually, let's get straight away into that, because, of course, I'd like to touch on a bit of the English ladies game going on. And, of course, a bit of the goal line technology debate that's now going to be arising once again with FIFA saying that it's going to be at the 2014 World Cup. But you were at the press conference yesterday for Arsene Wenger in the build-up to this Bayern Munich game tonight. What do you call this? Do you call this a breakdown? Do you call it a meltdown? Do you call it a blip in the water? What is this from Arsene Wenger?
No, it wasn't quite a meltdown, but it was quite extraordinary. And I've heard a couple of people say they didn't think he was particularly angry. They don't know what the fuss was about. Well, I can tell you, having been sitting on the front row yesterday, that there was a very, very unusual atmosphere in the room. It was completely different to any of the many Arsene Wenger press conferences I've been to, either pre-match or post-match. And bearing in mind, this was a pre-match press conference, so it wasn't immediately after a heavy defeat where he might be really angry. He was absolutely livid, and the room full of journalists were completely stunned, myself included, because it seemed to me as though shortly before the press conference, somebody had showed him that morning's newspapers and he absolutely flipped. And then he came straight in and let off a lot of steam. That's the impression that I got. I didn't think he'd maybe had many hours to stew on it. It seemed very fresh. And he really wanted to lay into the person who'd done the story in the Sun newspaper. I don't think that person was there. That he was going to be offered a 2-year contract extension. And instead, he picked on somebody whose story he thought it was. And it wasn't him. He picked on Neil Ashton of the Daily Mail and said, "Why are you looking at me?" And Neil said, "Because it's your press conference." And he said, "Oh, I thought you did the story." And he said, "No, it wasn't me." So not like Wenger to lose his cool, but he was very, very angry. And it might sound strange that it was a positive news story, if you like, that he was going to stay at the club. But Wenger thought it was very, very cynical because he knew how much pressure he was under and how angry the fans are after that defeat by Blackburn, which you and I witnessed on Saturday, that he thought it was a strategic attempt to get the fans even more angry, seeing an article saying that he was going to be staying for an extra couple of years beyond his contract, which expires next summer. And so he just let rip because he thought it was really undermining him, and he demanded respect from the press, and he was absolutely fuming.
I mean, if there is a man that deserves respect for what he's done at a football club, Arsene Wenger surely deserves the utmost respect from the press and the fans. But this sort of attitude going into a press conference is never going to help him fall back in love with the fans and with the press once again. Surely they'll just be looking out and kind of gunning for him a little bit more, if anything, after this.
Well, it's really interesting because it did take us all aback. We were genuinely shocked by not just what went on in the broadcast media press conference, but I was also still there writing a script when I sort of overheard what he was saying to the newspaper journalist, which is what's come out in the press today. And he went even further. He really, really wanted to get off his chest what it was that was annoying him. And it was good. I mean, we were perfectly happy to listen to that. And he got it off his chest. But it seems to me that, as we're all on Twitter, that the feedback from Arsenal supporters has actually been supportive of Wenger in his outburst against the media. And it might actually inadvertently, because I don't think he's done it on purpose, have worked in his favour in that it's got Arsenal fans back defending their manager just in time for an absolutely huge match in the Champions League against Bayern Munich.
It is an absolutely huge match tonight. Does that press conference, does that outburst, does that have an effect in the dressing room at all, do you think, going into tonight's game? Does that create that us against them atmosphere that teams can rally behind sometimes?
I certainly got the impression that he was quite happy to create a siege mentality because he has got everybody against him. And of course, the players that played on Saturday weren't particularly outstanding. Yes, they were better than Blackburn and they had far more possession, far more chances. But the fact is they lost the game. And so he has got his critics. They're heading for an eighth successive season without a major trophy, which is it's simply unacceptable to the vast majority of Arsenal supporters. And it looks as though it's going to go that way. Nobody can see them getting past Bayern Munich. But yes, I mean, if the atmosphere in the press conference is anything to go by, and the look of on Mikel Arteta's face, who was there to also answer questions alongside Arsene Wenger, if that's anything to go by, then you would think it's a bit like when your teacher lets rip at school, you're normally mild-mannered teacher, and they've just had enough of your behaviour and everybody's stunned into silence. You kind of think, oh my God, we need to buck up our ideas. Now, how that translates onto the pitch, we don't know. We'll see in the match. But certainly he was absolutely at the end of his tether and wasn't going to put up with anything else.
Now, what has to go right for Arsenal tonight to get something out of this? Because everybody is seemingly writing Bayern Munich's name into the next round of the tournament already in the Champions League tonight.
Yep, they are. And there's good reason for that. It's the fact that they haven't lost in any competition since October. They've only conceded one league goal away from home all season in 11 matches. They've won every game of their five in 2013 without conceding a goal, whereas Arsenal haven't lost since Saturday. There's a pretty good reason why everyone's singing the praises of Bayern Munich. But, of course, this is football. And as we all know, those of us who've been watching it long enough know that upsets happen. And it's not like Arsenal are a bunch of cloggers. They have some very top footballers. They have the likes of Jack Wilshere. They have the likes of Theo Walcott, who on his day can be devastating with his pace. They have quality in the likes of Cazorla. It just depends who's on song on the night. If they catch Bayern on an off night, then maybe Arsenal can get a decent result. But then, of course, they have the second leg of the Allianz Arena to come. And if it were a one-off match, then you'd back Arsenal a lot better than you would over two legs. So it looks unlikely, but hey, Wenger's got them so fired up, it's going to be fascinating.
Stranger things have happened in football, Jackie, but this is also arguably, would you say this is the worst side for Arsenal to face with the fullback problems that they have and the threat and the lethal aggression on the wings that Bayern bring to the game?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is the Bayern side who can afford to put Mario Gomez on the bench, for goodness sake. So yes, it's not ideal. The fact that Monreal, their new left back, isn't available. Koscielny is very much a doubt. They've certainly got their problems at the moment. They might have to put Carl Jenkinson on at right back. It's certainly Arsenal have got some problems at the moment. But Bayern Munich are pretty much the worst team to face. But as we've said before, this is football and things can happen and they do have talent in the side and they're at home. Perhaps a siege mentality after all the headlines and all the talk in the media after the last couple of days. It's just let's go out there and let's just do everything on the pitch to shut everybody up. Because as we know, that's the best way to quieten fans and any critics in the media is to actually go and win a game of football.
Jackie, can you give us a score prediction for tonight's game?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I think if Arsenal come away with a draw, they'll have done pretty well. But I think it's going to be 2-1 to Bayern tonight.
2-1 to Bayern. Well, I can see that happening. I think a lot of us can see that one happening, to be honest, this evening. Jackie, Arsenal fans might want to start looking towards maybe elsewhere to find a bit of joy and a bit of silverware. And their ladies' side is getting ready to kick off the Women's Super League season once again in the next month. Talk about women's football in England at the moment. How much on a rise is it after the Olympics last summer?
Yeah, the Olympics last summer was a huge boost to women's football, particularly in this country, but probably around the world as well. I mean, there's never been a British women's football team at the Olympic Games, so it was a first. And it was a shame they didn't get beyond the quarterfinals because they built up so much momentum from the first three matches, which they won all of them without conceding a goal. And of course, they beat Brazil, the famous Brazil, usually so full of flair and talent, and the great Marta, top player in the world, beat them at Wembley Stadium in front of 70,000 people. people. So it was a real anticlimax when they went out in the quarters. But so many more people watched women's football than had ever seen it before. The fact that it was on the first game against New Zealand was 2 days before the Olympics actually started. So they had the eyes of the world on them. And people like Steph Horton have made a name for themselves. And maybe not too many people had heard of her before. But now it's really important that they build on that. They had the second half of the women's FAWSL season last year.
And there's another really big summer coming up for them this year with the Women's European Championships being held in Sweden in July. And that's going to be live on BBC television, which is a first. We've never had an entire women's tournament live on TV in this country. So a huge opportunity for the players and a real difference for them, for people to actually be able to watch them from the first game all the way through the tournament. Whereas sometimes in the past, we've maybe picked up the tournament at quarterfinal stage, at latter stages, usually when they've got knocked out. So a real opportunity for them. And of course, it comes right in the middle of the WSL season. So should mean more people coming through the gates once they've seen people on television. So yeah, another big year.
Is there a massive amount of pressure on the women's national side to garner that kind of the enjoyment and the support of the of your football fans to then filter down to the women's league game? Because we know people like Casey Stoney, Kelly Smith, Sophie Bradley, etc., but people may not know who they play for in the women's league.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the next big step. I think the elite level international side, players are reasonably well recognised now amongst football supporters, but they certainly might not know Megan Harris, for example, who plays for Lincoln Ladies in the top division, Jess Fishlock, who plays for Wales, although she's just moved now to the United States. They're not household names at all. And I think the key thing really is for people to know that this league exists and to know that they can go to FAWSL and find their nearest team. There are 8 teams in the WSL and they're dotted all over the country. So there should be somewhere for people to go. And something else they don't realise probably is just how cheap it is. I mean, you can get a family of 4 going to watch top level women's football for £10. I mean, what else can you do as a family for £10? And usually thrown into that, there's face painting, there's pre-match entertainment, there's lots of activity with players afterwards and signing autographs. It's a real family day out. I think it's just a case of people knowing that it's there and looking at their local team and actually going along.
You mentioned there Jess Fishlock, and she is moving to Seattle to be part of the newly formed NWSL out in the US.
Knowledge, Ollie. Very good knowledge.
I've done a little bit of research, thank you, Jess. No, but in all seriousness, is that a problem? Because the women's game is so much bigger in America that players, once they start to maybe get a name for themselves on the international scene, can be picked and handpicked to go out to this new women's league in the US?
Yeah, it's certainly a danger. That's actually why the WSL was set up. Hope Powell was desperate to stop losing top players, the likes of Alex Scott, Kelly Smith, Katie Chapman at the time when she was involved with England, Karen Carney, Ennie Aluko, Anita Asante, all went out to the United States. And that's frankly because the league wasn't good enough in this country. It was played in the winter. There were so many matches called off because of icy, frozen pitches. And it was a bit of a mess, frankly. So the new summer league has made a big difference. It's semi-professional now, so at least players get paid for playing, even if most of them do have to work part-time as well. But you are always going to get the odd player, such as Jess Fishlock, who wants to go and play in the States. And who can blame her? What a wonderful opportunity to go out to the United States and meet up, play for Laura Harvey, who's left Arsenal Ladies. So, at least you're minimising the chances that's going to happen by providing a proper league over here.
Now, Jackie, I have also done a little bit of research on yourself as well, and you actually have an FA coaching badge to your name and a former avid player of football. I mean, is there part of you that would love to be right now able to kind of get right involved with this women's league and get involved maybe hands-on as a coach? Have you ever thought about that at all?
No, I'd love to be a player though. I'm sure you're the same. We'd much rather be playing football than talking about it, wouldn't we?
But yeah, I can agree with you on that one, I have to say.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, lack of talent, lack of opportunity, lack of coaching, all of these things. I think probably, in all honesty, in my case, it would have been lack of talent. But anyway, it would be much better to be hands-on. But no, I'm really lucky to be able to do the next best thing, and that is to watch games for a living, men's and women's football, and to go to games and to talk about them and I suppose spread the word if you like, but just to be involved. I'm very, very lucky.
do you find having that coaching badge, your coaching qualification, does help you maybe to help break down the game as you're watching it, as you're viewing it from a kind of an analytical position as a journalist?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I did the qualification because I wanted to. I really wanted to be a bit more hands-on in terms of coaching. And I think if you're going to be talking through a game for other people, whether it's radio or television, I think a deeper understanding of the game is only going to be beneficial to you, isn't it? So I'd also like to do a referee's course as well, because I'm absolutely fascinated by the laws of the game. And I get really frustrated when people willy-nilly reel off subjects like daylight, oh, there wasn't daylight, therefore he's not offside, and all that nonsense. And you think it's really poor to not actually know the laws of the game. And we could all read them online, but there are a lot of nuances and directives from the FA. So that's the next thing I'd definitely like to do is a referee's course.
Well, just finally on the referee's course then, Jackie, I mean, they are getting a little bit of help now with the introduction of goal line technology being approved by FIFA. Where do you stand on the goal line technology idea? Do you like having the debate in football, or do you think that we should have the goal line technology brought in as soon as possible?
Yeah, I absolutely totally disagree with people who say, oh, but the discussion of the injustice in the pub afterwards is what it's all about. No, it's not. how can it be a good thing that there's complete and utter injustice just so we can talk about it in the pub? We'll still talk about the game in the pub afterwards. We don't have to talk about injustice. Personally, just my opinion, but I don't think goal line technology goes anywhere near far enough. I mean, how many games are there really where it's a case of has the ball crossed the line, has it not? Only a handful a season in all the divisions. Whereas there are far more serious issues that happen on a minute-by-minute basis in football. And I frankly believe that there should be another official in the stands. And I don't think it should go to a major referral dramatic situation like you have in rugby league. I don't think we need that. I just think you need an extra pair of eyes with a referee in the stands who's got his technology, who can whiz back quickly to incidents and see exactly what happened. He doesn't have to wait for television replays. He can just have a little scroller and whiz back quickly and see, yep, he got the ball, no, that's fine. Or, yes, that was a very dangerous tackle and he jumped in two-footed with his studs and the referee missed it. And you can just deal with it within seconds. You don't have to wait. It's not going to break up play. I just can't see why referees don't get the help that they need when millions and millions of people around the world can see what's just gone on 3 seconds earlier. And the poor referee who's right in the thick of the action can't have eyes everywhere and he misses it and everyone's vilifying him. It's a no-brainer. It should be a referee in the stand.
Unlike the average football fan there, Jackie, getting on the side of the referees. Love to hear that on World Football Day.
Yeah, I feel sorry for them. They're only doing their best.
And we can only expect them to do that with what they've got right now, that's for sure. Jackie, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. An absolute media legend in terms of English football journalism. It's a pleasure. We'd love to get you back on at some point later on in the season.
Oh, bless you, Ollie. It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you so much. Jackie Oatley joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about all things Arsene Wenger and Arsenal in the build-up to the big Champions League game tonight. And, of course, getting into a little bit of women's football in the UK and how that's developing. Will we ever see names like Casey Stoney, like Kelly Smith, being put in the same league as Hope Solo or Abby Wambach? Hopefully we will here in the UK. We're going to take a very quick break on the show. When we return, we're going to be having more build-up to this week's Champions League. Mr. Ben Haywood from Goal.com will be joining us to talk about AC Milan taking on Barcelona tomorrow night. We'll be back in just a moment.